Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Is It Just Me?, the podcast that reassures you you're not alone in giving far too much time, attention, and brain capacity to the very trivial, silly things in life. But you know what, people? These things, this shit matters, and I'm here to tell you that. In fact, when I say I'm afraid it is just me this week. My regular host, Joe Elvin, is away in Australia, so it's just me, James Williams, this week. Joe, if you're listening all the way in Australia, we miss you. Do come back. And when I say it's just me, don't panic, everyone. Don't switch off, because it would be such a dull show if it was just me wittering on for the next 30 or 40 minutes all by myself. I'm not alone, fear not. In fact, I've roped in a very special guest to me. She's a very dear old friend and a work colleague. She's a brilliant journalist and a writer. We've worked together many years, and she's interviewed a whole host of celebrities that we'll get into in a little bit. But anyway, she's also now turning her hand to she's basically becoming a bona fide fiction writer, and her debut book, The School Run, is out in a couple of weeks' time. And The School Place, sorry.
No, it's called The School Run.
Oh, it is The School Run. I've ruined my intro. It is The School Run, here to talk about her debut novel. It's our friend, my old mucker, and like I said, soon to be debut author, Helen Whittaker.
Hello.
Oh, God, that was going so well.
It was going well.
And then I doubted myself. I knew it was called that.
Just to reiterate, everyone, it's called The School Run. It's out on August the 8th. By Helen Whittaker.
I know, and I'm an absolute chump. Helen's looking at me going, who?
You're too flustered, because we used to sit next to each other for 7 years.
I was going to say.
And now we are reunited next to each other in this office space that we're recording the podcast.
There's an element of like poacher turned gamekeeper about all this, isn't there? It's very weird. I'm here interviewing you. But anyway, how are you?
I'm good.
Are you nervous about this? You know, the book's out in a few weeks. Also, can I just say, in a very Leo way, it's the perfect birthday present to yourself.
It is. I thought, how can I top my birthday? And I thought, I'm going to release my book, you know, a couple of days after my birthday. So everyone has to basically have 2 days dedicated to me within a week.
And if anyone says, what do you want for your birthday? Buy my book.
Yeah, buy my book for everyone you know and yourself.
Now, I feel almost as proud as you do about this book, because I feel like I've been with you. I remember, you know, you talking about it. But for those of you who aren't in the know, tell everyone about the history, how this came to be, and what they can expect from the book.
So the book is, as it says in the title, The School Run. It is a comedy, I hope, about the lengths that...
You are very funny, so I have every confidence it's going to be hysterical.
I've got a history of laughing at my own jokes, so we'll see.
There's nothing wrong with that.
It's a comedy about the lengths mums will go to get a school place for their children, a primary school place. So it's state school set, catchment area wars, and people pretending to be much more godly than they actually are, etc.
Now, the thing is, I don't have children, but I mean, this is a real thing. And obviously, you wrote this book. I mean, this book's been in the writing and in the planning for a long, long time, way before the whole scandal that's broken in the US. But in terms of PR, worked out quite well. Because
thanks, Felicity Huffman.
I was going to say, but I mean, that's such a crazy story. For those of you that don't know, obviously, Felicity Huffman and quite a lot of parents in America have been arrested for basically trying to scam the school system, right?
Yes. So theirs is based on the college system, I think. But yeah, they've basically gone to extreme lengths, as in illegal ones, to get their children into universities. But over here, it's a similar vibe in that there was, I think there was a poll that was done not that long ago where they found that one in three middle-class parents know someone, in inverted commas, who has gone to fraudulent lengths to get a school place for their child. The most common thing they do is religious fraud, but other things include pretending to move house, so they've got a second address, registering grandparents' address, pretending to split up with their partners so that then they can have two addresses registered to the same child. All these like little,
I mean,
things.
It's literally like turf wars, isn't it? It's like, I mean, like I said, I don't have them, but we have lots obviously of mothers who listen to our podcast. I know that. And I guess this is going to be very familiar territory to many of them. Now, obviously, this is a work of fiction.
Yes.
We're using air quotes there. But I mean, I know for a fact that lots of the anecdotes that come up in this, in the book, are based on true. Obviously, I'm not expecting you to name and shame people for real. But I mean, what are the most out there things that you've heard firsthand?
Well, it's one
or experienced
of those things that as soon as you mention it to anyone, that I'm writing this novel, it's fiction, but I know it's based on things that people really do, people will say, oh yeah, because my friend, she moved her entire family, husband, three children, into a one-bedroom flat opposite the school so that they could get a place. And then as soon as they got a place, they moved back into their four-bedroom, you know, giant house where they actually live and spend their time. Or there's people who, they'll go to tea with the vicar for 2 years, turn up at church every week, get their children, you know, confirmed, whatever it takes. And then once they've got the place, don't see him for dust.
I mean, like, it is crazy, isn't it? Because I mean, I know people who did that when they got married, like people who literally only started going to a certain church because they wanted to get married in that church. And they basically just became religious in the run up to their wedding. So I guess it's all about this weird chocolate box. But there's a lot more to it, I guess, with school places, because obviously you are thinking about, you know, your child's future and, you know, forming their minds. But I guess for me, because of where I grew up in a town in South Wales, you know, there was just the school.
Yeah.
You know, there weren't the options. There wasn't this incredible snobbery about where you went to. I mean, obviously there was more than one, but you know, they were pretty much all much of a muchness. There wasn't like this sense of you must get your child into that one school. Is this a sort of inner city thing versus a rural thing? I don't feel like it's as much of a thing in the countryside, right?
No, it is. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, my book's based in London, that is quite rife. There's obviously, you know, you can see the Ofsted reports, you can see the league tables, you can see who gets to go to the grammar school and who, you know, which places get university, you know, Oxbridge and all that sort of stuff. But I'm from Chesterfield, which is a smaller town in Derbyshire, and it's going on there as well. Because, I mean, very often the religious school, the Christian school, is the good school, in inverted commas. So, you know, they've only got a certain number of places. So people do it out there. I think this is a nationwide thing. I think it's definitely applies.
Well, it's going to appeal to everyone. But I mean, talk to me a bit about the writing process. Because like I said, I know, because I was kind of with you, well, a lot of the way. But
whilst I was wanging on about trying to be an author, James had to sit next to me. Ugh,
I mean, Joe and I say this often, because we often have people on the podcast who have books to promote. And I sound like a stuck record. I say it every time. I literally doff my cap to someone who can literally write a book, because it, to me, it just seems like such an insurmountable task. But for you, I mean, you've got a young son, and you know, you had a full-time job, and you just kind of made it work around all of that you had going on. How the hell did you do it? What was the process for you?
Well, I'm really not very up to date with my box sets at the moment, put it that way. So I think it's just the one thing becoming a parent does, and I don't want to be one of those people who sit there going, as a mother, I know how to manage my time. But I think when you have less free time, this is what I found personally anyway, when you have less free time, you become very picky about what you do with the free time you have, and you also become very efficient with the time that you have.
Yeah.
So the way I did it mainly was that my childcare starts at 8 o'clock in the morning, and my job starts at 9:30 in the morning, which allows me 30 minutes each day of time between dropping my kid off and needing to get to work. So I will go to Pret a Manger and sit on my laptop for half an hour.
And was it just having that kind of deadline / pressure just made you way more productive?
It did, but also, I mean, you know, I've worked for magazines for years, so writing a 1500 word feature in a day is doable.
Yeah.
So, and I think actually, how I thought of it. I was like, a chapter is around 1500 words for me, not for everyone, but the way I write it, that's how it turned out to be. So I was like, well, you write this chapter, you get to this scene, you do this, and then you move on. Whereas I didn't think of it as I have to write 95,000 words.
No, and it's interesting that we had Giovanna Fletcher on the podcast last week, and obviously she's a fiction writer herself, and she says, you know, that's what she looked at it as, like almost like a word count. You have a daily word count, and that's what she applies. But I mean, she also said that, you know, she didn't stress herself out if it just wasn't happening that day. Sometimes you just get days when you just nothing's coming. Did you have that kind of writer's block, or do you think your training as a journalist stood you in good stead, and you just could?
I think I had days where what I wrote was an absolute load of old shit, but I
that didn't make the book, by the way, everyone. I didn't, yeah.
And the result is no. But again, going back to the journalism thing, some days you would write a feature and you'd be like, "This is terrible. I just need to get it down on paper, and then tomorrow I will edit it into something that's actually readable and hopefully quite good."
Yeah.
So that's what I would do. I'd be like, "If this scene's not really working, just keep writing, and eventually knock it into shape afterwards."
Well, basically, if you're a parent, if you're not a parent, you need to check out this book, because Helen's my mate, but also she's a very, very good writer.
And there's a sexy vicar in it.
Oh, exactly. Again, I forgot to mention the sexy...
Which is very on trend. Thank you, Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Pre-Fleabag. You've got some kind of inner eye, Helen. You've clearly got some sort of soothsayer, because you jumped on the Felicity Huffman thing and the hot vicar before.
I am more than happy to cling on to Phoebe Waller-Bridge's coattails on the sexy clergyman front.
Those are some great tails to be clinging on to. Yeah, there's a sexy vicar. What more could you ask for? And also, it's the perfect time of year. It's summer. Everyone's heading off on holiday. So it's available on Kindle and obviously Kindle in good old-fashioned paperback.
Paperback, yes.
My copy is already ordered. It's been delivered on the day of release, I believe.
And it will be signed.
Yes, I'm going to be there like a little super fan. But yes, it's at August 8th.
Yep.
It's the school run, just to reiterate. I don't want to fluff that again. Helen, so proud of you. Honestly, good luck with the book. I beseech you all to go and check it out. But you are also here because I know you are a woman with opinions.
Oh, yes.
And you're not afraid to share them. So let's get on to sorting the wheat from the chaff, shall we?
Yes, let's do it.
Do it. So first up this week, Helen and anyone else listening, is it just me that literally the veins in my neck start bulging the second I get an email from somebody who has literally no signature, no contact info at the end of their email? You know there's a certain kind of person, right?
Yes, a hipster.
Yeah.
Usually a hipster. You can contact me by pigeon between the hours of 4 and 5.
Well, see, I think for you and me, I mean, Helen and I, for those of you that don't know, we used to work in sort of, we still do in journalism and
we've
magazines.
We've retired.
But, you know, we predominantly worked in film, TV, music, you know, it's sort of celeb interviewing and booking and covers, shoots and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, there are some PRs who work in that realm who basically never have, they basically say, do not get hold of me. And so they deliberately don't have. And for me, I think if you are in the business of communication, you should have all of your, you know, it should be your Instagram handle, your mobile. Because inevitably, I always think those are the people that will drop an almighty shitstorm. And then you need to speak to them, and there's no way, you cannot pin down a phone number for them for love nor money to get hold of them.
Well, also, surely the reason you're being hired by talent is because you are their people. And if you cannot get hold of their people, then how are you supposed to?
I just think it makes you a bit shifty. If you're literally withholding your contact information, it's a bit like, well, hang on, you know.
I mean, I can... There's a bit of me that can see why you don't want everybody to know your mobile number outside of working hours, depending on what your job is.
Don't get me wrong. I get that. I still feel very tense about it, because obviously now that I'm freelance, I have no choice but to always, even when I'm hired by, you know, companies to do long jobs and stuff, I always have to have my mobile number.
Yeah.
And I have to say, it's, you know, the number of private numbers or number withheld that calls that I now get, and I have no choice now, you know, unlike those people that can just literally live in blissful ignorance and never answer those calls. Well, I'm answering them for everyone because that's all I get. And to be honest,
you can't assume is this a car accident that's not your fault.
No,
you're like, no, this is actually,
this could be a very
redacted person,
and I'm telling me that they're not happening. Yeah, exactly. So I have no choice. So maybe that's why I get a bit more angry about it now, because I have to have my contact info, because, you know, also, it's that element of, you know, you can get hold of me, but I can't ever get hold of you.
Yeah,
you know
where you are at all times.
Yeah.
It does tend to go hand in hand as well with the new phenomenon, which is the sort of out of office when you're not actually out of office. It's more like, I'm receiving a high volume of emails so that I may take time to get back to you. And I don't know about you, but usually those people get back to me within about 15 minutes when I get that bounce back.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's the problem. Do you think... people feel like, oh, get over it. I'm on my email all the time. Just send me an email and I'll respond to the email. And I guess that is true. There is an element of that.
But you're quite old school.
I am. I like a phone call.
You do. And you didn't have a Rolodex until very, very recently.
I know. God, that's really embarrassing. That's actually no word of exaggeration or lie. I did have a Rolodex. And the younger demographic listening to us are going, what the fuck's a Rolodex?
Exactly.
I know. I still say to people, and I can always tell when I've slipped into like Gen Z versus maybe, actually even millennials will probably struggle with a Rolodex. But whenever I say, you know, my mental Rolodex, I'm trying to picture somebody's face or name, they're like, what?
Because
a Rolodex is, yeah, it's so retro. It's like a landline.
I know.
I am a bit old school. I do like a phone call. But I guess there is a serious point here, isn't there, whereby, you know, some people are now genuinely like, if their phone rings, they're like, what is that?
Freak out, yeah.
The phone anxiety.
Yeah.
Whereas I still love, you know, I mean, you know, often when I meet people in person, that's a rarity as well in our business, isn't it? You know, often we're so now people who do things via email or, you know, text. I mean, there's a real thing happening in my world now where people are even now sort of pushing email to one side and they say, oh, WhatsApp me.
I was going to say, do they say WhatsApp?
Yeah.
I mean, at least you get the blue tick so you know if they've looked at it.
That is true. Yes, that is true.
Whereas an email, you can feel like you're emailing into an abyss. Especially
yeah.
When you're trying to book a celebrity for something.
That does often happen. But yeah, I mean, again, I do get the feeling that maybe some people are sat there going, oh, God, just chill out, James, for God's sake. It's like, you know, but for me, I guess, like I said, it's just a bit like, I just like to have the option. Because the truth is, you know, for as much as I like a chat, I'll only ever really call if the shit's really hitting the fan. Like, I mean, yeah. More often than not now, we all like to do things via email. Come on.
We like to do it via email, except we all know everyone loves a phone call when you don't want a paper trail.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there is that. So that, yeah, exactly.
Can we just hop on a call yeah. And you know nothing good is going to come out of it.
So you have to have that. Just wanted to float something past you. You know that's basically something you don't want to put in paper, in black and white, yeah. In an email. Well, look, if you are sat there going, James, you're not a freak. I hate people that don't have contact info at the end their emails, then well, please do get in touch and reassure me. We do love hearing
with your signature on the end.
With your signature on the end, yes, because that would be yeah, that would be massively orcs if you did that. But yeah, do get in touch with us, guys. We love hearing from you. The usual email address is itjustmepodcast@gmail.com. And this week we got a lovely email actually from Paula Jacobson, giving you a little shout out. You said, "Hi, James and Joe. I started listening to your podcast a few months ago, and it makes me so happy. It's just a tonic." Oh, thanks, Paula. "My mum died 9 months ago, and this podcast is like my weekly relief where I can indulge in frivolous stuff." Well, that is certainly us, Paula. But in all seriousness, if we in any way are making life a bit easier for you, that really means a lot to us. Sending you lots of love. Keep listening. And thanks for getting in touch. And if you too want to shout out, like I said, get in touch, like Paula, send us an email. It's isitjustmepodcast@gmail.com.
So, James, second topic, bit more serious. We've had our moan about email.
Oh, there'll be more, but yes, let's get on to it.
But is it just me, or should we ban the stiff upper lip for good?
It's a very British thing, isn't it, the stiff upper lip?
Yes. I also think in the context of mental health, male mental health,
yes.
I think we definitely should ban the stiff.
I mean, to be honest, we have a long list of topics, and we love you guys sending in your suggestions. We add them to like a master list of topics. But I actually wrote this one a while ago, and it was exactly that. It was something that had happened. A friend of a friend of mine, actually, rather sadly, was affected by suicide. Somebody took their life because they just hadn't shared. They just, you know, and it made me really think, God, actually, if you're talking about toxic phrases, there is something about the stiff upper lip. It's something we've been fed, and our parents before us, generations have been fed it, you know, that we just don't share our emotions, we don't let people in, so that was kind of where it came from. And to be honest, you know, I've said before on the show, you know, I've kind of gone the other way now, probably to the embarrassment of, you know, my family and friends. They're like, oh God, James is such an oversharer. But again, I think the term overshare actually has slightly negative undertones, because again, it kind of buys into that whole, you know, don't show your emotion,
yeah,
don't
definitely.
Show weakness.
It's like, keep your emotions away from me. And
yeah,
it's a bit kind of, yeah, it's negative. I mean, my personal experience of this, I have a 3.5-year-old son,
yeah,
who I'm more than aware of the world around him and the, you know, what boys should do versus what girls should do, which society is trying to tell him, even as me and his dad are trying to tell him not to do those things. And I mean, he emotes all over the place at the minute. There's a lot of emotion going on. There's many meltdowns, but there's also a bit of me that just thinks, I'm glad you can do that. And that's what you lose as you get older, and people tell you to man up, grow up.
Another terrible phrase, man up,
exactly,
isn't it?
Keep your stiff upper lip. And then they say it as if it's a badge of honour that us Brits are great with our stiff upper lip. And it's like, well, or they're, you know, hiding some terrible trauma going on inside.
And it does feel very British because, you know, I guess, you know, even things like illness and bereavements, you know, we're just not very good at dealing with this stuff. And weirdly, it gets you into a cycle then that when it does happen to you, you know, not only do you not know how to handle it yourself, you often find it, you know, but we've heard stories of people, you know, I've heard stories of people saying they've crossed the street when they've seen someone they know that's going through either a terrible time or they've had someone close to them die because they literally don't know how to handle it.
Or they just don't know what to say or how to start a conversation or just to say, are you all right?
Yeah.
And then someone does say, are you all right, to you? And you feel like you must go, oh yeah, not bad, not bad.
Yeah. I mean, Dawn O'Porter, actually, who used to, when we worked on Glamour, was one of our columnists. And I remember she once said something about, you know, because, you know, again, this often comes about, this phrase oversharing, doesn't it? When it comes to social media, people often say things on their Facebook page or whatever. And again, it's a very British thing, isn't it? To not, oh gosh, you don't air your dirty laundry in public. And, you know, people I do think now are kind of crossing over. And I've seen a massive change in the way people do suddenly take it to a very public forum. And for as much as there's part of me, because I've been raised in this kind of, you know, don't air your dirty laundry, I kind of think, do you know what? I'd rather you did that than basically just be this tightly wound coil of a person that then just does something really silly. But, you know, Dawn said something really interesting where she basically said she... You know, when somebody says something like that, she doesn't just say, oh, I'm sorry, or puts an emoji. She actually tries to engage with them.
Yeah.
And I think that's really commendable because sadly, that's how a lot of us do handle it. You either just like it or use the sad
emoji, you know. Seems really inadequate.
But, you know, I always feel like, you know, when people tell me things now, I think the problem, it's a terrible fear, isn't it? Because you always think, oh, I'm going to say something wrong and I'm going to make things worse.
Yeah.
Well, the truth is, if that person's going through a bad time, there's nothing you can say that's going to make them feel much worse,
no.
You know? And I'm just a big believer in saying, nothing I'm going to say is going to make you feel any better, but I just want you to know, I'm really fucking sorry.
Yeah.
And if there's anything I can do, I'm here for you.
Well, definitely. And also, I think saying nothing, it feels worse because people feel like, oh, I've put something out there and now everyone is sort of backing off from me, backing away, and I shouldn't have said it, which means they reassess what they did the first time and then they stop doing it. I do think now, though, things are getting a lot better.
I think
there's a lot of famous people. Fern Cotton, the author Matt Haig, has done a lot around male mental health. I think that, you know, people being much more open about their own struggles has made, you know, civilians like us much more likely to be able to say something.
Yeah. And I think, I also think as well, you know, I mean, it's hard, isn't it? But you know the people closest to you as well, I think. And I'm not saying that this is a blanket thing, but often, you know, your instincts don't put you on the wrong path. Like when one of my friends is struggling, you instinctively know. And even if you do have to have that slightly, and sometimes you're wrong, sometimes your instincts are off and you go, God, I'm totally fine, you know? But like I said, I'm now of that belief where I'd rather have a slightly awkward encounter and be wrong. I'd be assured that I'm barking up the wrong tree than to never say anything and then to hear months down the line that person was going through a really, really tough time and all they wanted was one person just to say, are you all right?
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
But like I said, I think it's because we're unpicking and we're undoing. You know, like I said, generations.
And also, I think a lot of the time it's not the people who've talked about stiff upper lip or man up or all that sort of stuff. I don't think they've actually meant anything bad.
No.
They don't. I mean, I was in the park not that long ago with my son and another kid was there with his mum and he fell off the swing and he was probably about four, fell off the swing, started crying. And I think to try and book him up, I don't think she meant anything bad by it. She was like, oh, come on, don't cry. Big boys don't cry.
Yeah.
And I actually gasped when she said it because I just thought, don't say that. That's just reinforcing. Boys shouldn't show their emotions. They shouldn't be hurt. They shouldn't, you know, they shouldn't feel pain. All those things that when they grow up, that really affects how they feel they can engage with the world.
It's so hard, isn't it? And I guess I have to say, that's one of the reasons why I'm quite relieved I'm not a parent. Because I think, you know, you do have to think everything you say, you know, can be, you know, because we remember, I remember seeing my parents do and say things. And none of us are given an instruction manual you become a parent, you know, but you just don't know, do you? It is a minefield. But I think also that's why I love you, Helen, because you're one of my friends who is... You're the same person who just happened to become a mum.
You know, like, I'm really worried what you're going to say. Yeah. I like her because you are me.
A dark, twisted individual. Yeah. No, but you know, we've all had those friends that when they become a parent, well, they become a professional parent.
Hashtag so blessed.
Exactly. You know, and you, along with a lot of, actually, mainly most of my friends who are parents who are still my friends.
You attract.
Yeah. You're just
the
ones that
aren't afraid to call their own child an asshole.
Exactly. And that's the kind of people I live for. But no, but in all seriousness, you actually, you have a very, you should tell everyone about your very funny parenting column.
Oh, yes, I have a parenting column everyone, on sheerlooks.com.
Yes, and I think, again, if you are a parent, let's be honest, it can be fucking hard being a parent. I'm not even one, but I know it can be, because I've seen my friends, I've been on planes with people, children having meltdowns, and that parent's look is like, oh my God.
Dead behind the eyes.
Yeah, but you know, what I love about you, Helen, is, you know, you tell it like it is, and I think... in this book, and I think in your column, I think that's what people need. Because again, I think, sort of tying into the stiff upper lip thing, I think it's anything where you try to make out that it's hashtag so blessed or so perfect or idyllic. Yeah. And parenting is hard, and all it takes is one person to say, how's your day been? Fucking shit, my child's been a twat today. You know, and actually that person might go, oh my God, mine's being an asshole too. And then you have a very honest interaction, rather than going home and beating yourself up thinking you're the world's worst parent.
And my Instagram feed is not curated with pictures of my child looking perfect
in Bowdoin clothing, color coordinated. So I think what we're really saying here is,
let it out, people,
the British stiff upper lip, and if you think you have one, get rid of it. It's overrated.
I like nothing more than hearing people oversharing.
Exactly.
Quite frankly,
I mean, it's the journalist in us. I mean, you know,
I'm very nosy. So.
Yeah, true. Here, we are here for the oversharing, people, and obviously you're listening to this podcast, which is essentially me and our guests oversharing every week. So yes, let's get rid of that British stiff upper lip nonsense. Again, if you agree, get in touch. If you disagree, please do get in touch. We love hearing from you, as I say. So the email address once again is itjustmepodcast@gmail.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Right. Lastly, this week, everyone, I know you're on tenterhooks waiting for it, the big finale. Helen.
Yes.
Is it just me? And obviously, I've saved the very serious. I was going
to
say,
one.
Forget Brexit. Forget anything. Forget Trump. Is it just me who literally thinks there's a special place in hell for those people that sit on the outer seat of a bus when there's a spare seat near the window?
Yes. And also, worse than that is when you want to get to that seat and they move their knees maybe half a millimeter to let you past. They don't even bother to stand up and let you get past.
And they really huff. And there's that real...
You know, because God forbid their carrier bag must go on the floor.
I just don't understand it because, you know, is it really that much of a physical exertion just to shift your ass one seat further towards the window? Which, let's be honest, it's the window.
Yes.
You get a view, you're closer to the air.
I understand why they do it. The strategy I always think that they're doing is that
explain,
they're trying,
because I honestly don't get it.
I'll tell you my bus strategy versus what I think their strategy is. So I think their strategy is I sit on the outside, ergo I control who is sitting on this set of two seats.
Right.
Although the people who approach them are the more outgoing types that would say, excuse me, rather than just scuttle away and try and find somewhere else to sit. But it means they sort of have control who's coming in and out. They won't get boxed in next to the window by someone that they don't want to talk to.
If they
turn out to be a bit of a madhead. But my personal strategy in that situation is I would rather identify someone that I think is a kindly bus passenger, you know, a nice old lady, a mum perhaps. And if you're feeling a bit nervous about being on the bus or who might get on, I go and sit next to them, even if there is a seat free, because then I'm like, I know who I'm sitting next to. Everything is fine.
Yeah. See, I don't know. Maybe my problem with this is I, rather than being like that very, like I said, I'm far too British. So rather than just going, oh, can you move along, please? Or can you let me in? I just stand there and stew and just go... Well, just you're making me have an awkward interaction.
Next to them.
Yeah, and just hope that just from the tomato shade of my furious face that they'll get the fact that I'm angry with them. But they don't. Like you said, they're just happily there with their bag. It's just really puzzling. But also, what annoys me, it's the lack of self-awareness.
Yes.
Like, fair enough. If it's a totally empty bus, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's the people that come and feel the need to sit next to you when you're on an empty bus or train.
Yeah, then,
I mean, they're just total lunatics.
Yes.
I am talking, obviously, about a very busy bus or train. And I just think it's really weird to me that you don't think about your fellow man and go, oh, I'll just move in and stand up. I mean, I guess, do you think it's the same people that when you're going into a cinema row or a theatre row, they don't stand? They kind of shift their knees one way or the other. Are they a similar breed of people?
I feel like it's the same people who do that. They're also the people who in the cinema or a sporting event or wherever where there's a row that you have to go down, they leave one in between sets of people. If you're going to leave a space because you don't want to sit next to the other person, leave two. At least allow room for a set of people to come in.
That is weird, isn't it? But do you know what? I do wrestle with that sometimes, especially if I'm going into, like, say, if it's a Friday night at the cinema and you know it's a popular film.
Yeah.
I don't leave anything.
No, I wouldn't leave a gap at all. But leaving one is the worst thing.
But then I do worry then that that person might think I'm a sex pest. Because, I mean...
as long as you don't grope them during the film, you'll be all right.
But, you know, because it is... Again, because it goes back to my idea going, well, if I was on a tube and that person on an empty tube carriage and they came and sat right next to me, you'd be like, okay, something's going on here. I worry that they translate that into the same thing when I do it to somebody at the cinema. But I'm literally doing it knowing... I'm just basically saving time. Because what's going to happen is, as the cinema fills up, we're all going to be moved along anyway.
Yes.
But yeah, you're right. Always at least do it in pairs.
Yeah, it's different on a tube or a bus because often you're traveling by yourself. So if one person sits down or you leave one space, then another one person will sit down. In a cinema situation or that sort of setup, generally people are going to be coming in with friend/friends plural. So they will want more than one seat. And all they're going to do is say, can you move down one?
Exactly.
And you end up in a seat you didn't want to go in to start off.
Yeah, exactly. And that person's got to get into a warm seat, which is never very nice.
Bus etiquette generally is...
I mean, of course, all of this is forgiven and you are totally forgiven for being that person on the outer seat if you happen to be reading a copy of The School Run.
Yes. Or we hasten to add, if you have, you know, mobility problems or anything like that, all this is null and void and we're not that evil.
That is, we're not absolute dreadful people. We're just semi-dreadful people. You kind of have explained it to me though, because like I said, for me, it's just more of an, I'm just at an absolute loss, but you've kind of explained it a bit, that the control thing about
I don't want to get penned in.
Yeah,
that's the bit I can see. But when then you see someone standing next to you that needs a seat and then you sort of don't do anything or you move your legs the smallest amount you can move them to sort of indicate that they can sit down, that's a bit odd.
See, now we talked about this a bit, about talking to strangers on a recent show, but I've become that person now because of my dog Bingley, who's here and being an absolute pain, he won't sit down. But anyway, because of having Bingley now, when I go on buses, I kind of love having that thing whereby, you know, I talk to strangers on the bus all the time, you know, and it's always inevitably somebody, and we start talking about their dogs, and it's really cute. So I guess maybe I forget that it's, well, we are talking about London. I think maybe doing buses in the regions, they're not, you know, I think in London you are kind of fed this idea, you know, you don't talk to each other in inner city life, you know, we don't interact. Whereas,
well,
I think,
but yeah, I mean, also to bring up my child again, sorry.
How dare you?
I know. Getting on a London bus with a pushchair is, it basically represents everything I hate about London, because in that situation, I've been the first person at a bus stop, and by the time the bus has come, obviously more people have tried to get on, and they will swarm in around over your pushchair to get on that bus before you.
Yeah, it's so
and
weird,
so
isn't
I
it?
So I think the regions where me and James are both from,
yes, exactly,
everyone is a little bit more mindful. They certainly are when I go back home to Chesterfield.
Oh, good. Now I feel now I think I need to be a lot kinder to these people who are basically just, you know, taking up that outer seat. But like I said, I don't know, just really winds me up. And I refuse to apologise for it. Maybe I'll just avoid getting the bus. I need to walk more.
You need to walk, cycle, walk.
Yeah, avoid
or
people.
If you are the person who sits on the outside, just look up now and again.
Exactly.
And see if someone needs to stay.
I think actually that's what's at the heart of a lot of tube, bus, public transport rage. Is that we are in the age of, you know, reading books like yours, Helen, or, you know, in our listening to, you know, Is It Just Me on your headphones. And the thing is, you know, you do become properly engrossed, your nose is down, you're not looking around, and that's often what happens, because people just go, because, you know, I always say this about, like, you know, baby on board badges, like, oh, I'm always mortified if I ever see there's a pregnant lady, but I'm often reading a book, headphones in, I haven't looked around, but the second I see them, I'm literally out of my seat so fast. But often we just don't look around us, do we? I mean, obviously there are those awful people that look up and then look straight back down again, and we are talking about you, man from the city. I've seen those men not standing up for pregnant women.
I want a seat too, you know.
But then there is always that. I mean, it literally happened the other day where a man offered a woman his seat
and she wasn't pregnant.
I mean, literally, I wanted the ground to swallow
me
up.
That's why I love that badge. And some people are very against the badge. I don't know why. They just don't really don't like wearing it. They don't like shouting
I'm
about it.
I'm for the badge. Yeah, for that very reason.
Also, you can see the badge across a crowded tube. So you can then just be like, ah.
I wish anyone who doesn't believe in that badge, I wish I could have just played just my anxiety over what happened. Because honestly, I went red. I started sweating and I didn't even say it. The poor man. And it was that thing whereby she said,
didn't you have to get off?
No. It was awful. She basically said, no, I'm fine, thanks. And then proceeded. They stood opposite each other and he just sat there and she stood opposite, basically hovering over him for about 5 stops. I think in the end, I got off because it was too awkward.
You were too tense.
I literally, you know, it might shock you to believe this, Helen. I let it get to me. They styled it out. Maybe they weren't bothered.
But you're so chill, James.
I mean, I'm just so zen.
You are.
It's really working for me, my whole sort of zen way of living. Well, look, that's it. That's it, everyone. You finally had enough of me ranting. But Helen, thank you so much for joining
thank
us
you for
on
having
this show.
Me. This just makes me miss us working together.
I know.
Basically having conversations like this every day, everyone. Can you imagine?
Good job, we're actually friends and we get to see each other anyway, outside of podcasts. But honestly, Helen, good luck with the book. It's brilliant. The school run, it's out August 8th. I heartily recommend, once again, you read it. Check it out. It's a really, really great read. And if you're a parent, you will absolutely relate to the whole story. Helen, good luck with it.
Thank you.
Thanks again for joining us. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll be back very soon. Take care.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.